welcome to episode 24 of the JockX podcast show. My name is Jock, and today's special guest is Adam Didick. Now, Adam is an athletics coach who's fresh off coming from the World Championships in Beijing. Now, that wasn't the first team he'd coached on with athletes. He'd been in the Commonwealth Games last year in 2014, the World Champs in 2013, and made the Olympic as a coach in 2012 at London Olympics with one of his athletes. And I'm stoked to have him on because Adam is only 34 years of age and has achieved so much. And I'm really excited to bring his knowledge to this podcast, to all you listeners across Australia, across the globe now, really about his expertise and really nurturing talent, getting the most out of it, and really just, you know, working it from a lot of angles, from physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, to get the absolute best performance from his athletes. And that's what it is all about for us. Whether you're an athlete yourself, or whether you're in another sport, whether you're in business, whether you're still studying, really want to take your game to the next level. And Adam is one of those people who specializes in it. And I'm really happy to be able to share him with you all today. So guys, really listen into this one. We did it via Skype. I was in Melbourne. He was actually across in Adelaide, actually had an athletics meet by looks of things with a track outside his window. And yeah, we really had a great little chat and went through some really cool stuff. So guys, tune in for this one. I really want to do a shout out to all the new listeners on this one. So this is your first time. I'm excited that you're here and get to listen to some really different questions, I guess, pointed towards Adam, that if you have heard of him before, you might not have heard. And if this is your first time of hearing about Adam, then you're going to, you know, learn a lot about him and the great things he's doing. So guys, really sit back and enjoy this one. And make sure, you know, with your Facebook, with your Twitter, with your Instagram, really give it a share. Like, really share Adam's knowledge and expertise. And that's why we made a big effort to get him on the show. He's very tight for time, so we're lucky to have him. So make sure you give him a shout out. You know, tell us what you think on this podcast. You know, send me a message. Tell me how much you love it. And I'd really love to hear from you all. And, you know, and really, I'll pass that feedback on to Adam. So guys, hope you enjoy this one. Episode 24 with Adam Didick on the JockX podcast show. Welcome, Adam. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's awesome to have you here. And I was actually just thinking before, we haven't, I think, caught up since our mutual great mate, Tyson Popplestone, got married, I reckon, about, was it 4 years ago now? I think 4 years ago. We were both part of the wedding party. So that was a fun day, though.
Yeah, no, it was, and you know, seeing Tyson get married was a day I was looking forward to. But you know, knowing Tyson was probably one that you thought was going to take a bit longer to get that day, but he managed himself well and handled it like a champ.
Yeah, absolutely, and he's been a guest on the show a couple of times, obviously with his trip to Everest coming up. So I'm sure listeners have heard that, but I'm super stoked to have you here. I'd really like you to start, Adam, just give us a bit of a rundown about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, so basically my probably main sort of claim to what I've done in high performance as a coach, I wouldn't suggest my running background really really set the world on fire, but it probably gave me the footholds to get to coaching in the spirit that I did. So basically I started sort of running when I was a kid, always progressed through, spent time under numerous coaches, Not necessarily through choice, but through circumstance. I spent a year over in college in the US, going to the University of Memphis. Studied as a teacher here in Adelaide, as well as completed a major of sports psychology when I was in Memphis. So I've come back and basically worked as a teacher my whole life since then. And through that was trying to progress as a runner. Kind of found a point where I was getting a bit stuck, and at that point was where I had to go in for surgery on my Achilles. So I decided I'd offer my coaching services to a mate of mine and just see if I could help him out. And lo and behold, I really loved that. He got some great progress out of it. And it just all sort of, the snowball sort of effect happened from there. More athletes came along and then, you know, we were feeling quite comfortable with what we're doing, and I was really enjoying the coaching. The performance level just seemed to increase. So, you know, within what was it, about 4 or 5 years of coaching. I had Jessica Trengove at the Olympics, who did quite well over there and competed in a second marathon, being the Olympic marathon. And then sort of really loved that high performance level. So I've sort of been drawn more towards that over the last few years. I really loved that environment. Felt that I probably had the attributes attuned to being able to work at that level. And so continue to sort of push and progress to be in that sort of environment. So now I've got two athletes in the Australian flying team, one being Jessica Trengove, the other one being Madeline Heiner. Madeline's just been at the World Champs and has qualified for Rio, and Jess, we're hoping to have qualified for Rio soon enough. And along with that comes a great group of juniors that I'm coaching at the moment who are doing quite well on the national stage, and you know, hopefully they can then follow on those footsteps and take that next pathway towards where they want to go with their running as well.
Yeah, for sure. So you've basically, you know, got some really two key top runners in the Australian running scene. You've obviously just came back from the Beijing World Championships, where they, you know, both competed. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I was over there this year as a personal coach, just there for Madeline, basically. She was entered in the steeplechase in the 5,000 metres and probably a good chance of making a final in one of them. And unfortunately, as the event went and what we learnt from it was amazing, but just missed out on the final by one spot in both. So and it's always an interesting thing as a coach, because we sort of knew the potential, but then it's also dealing with acknowledging that the potential's still there, but maybe the results didn't quite happen, and sitting down and we actually had our review yesterday to talk about what we could do better next time so that we can move on and progress to the rounds and be competitive in the finals for her come Rio. So it is one of those things, that sport. It's a cutthroat nature. It's quite brutal and black and white, and you're either there or you're not. And so in this situation, it didn't quite go exactly to plan. But from my point of view, my biggest theme for actually attending was to go there and learn about Madeline, learn about how she manages this environment, learn about the competition, and work with her to understand what we needed to make a more successful approach towards it in Rio. Given that this is only her second year back in the sport, she had about 7 or 8 years off between being a junior and a senior. I kind of felt that it was quite an important foreground for her leading into a major thing like the Olympics. So sort of made the effort to be over there. And I would suggest that from a coaching point of view, it's successful that we learnt a lot of these crucial things we needed to going into Rio next year. And really that was the basis of the effort. And so, yeah, hopefully we can make the most of that next year.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. And in a short amount of time, you've managed obviously to have Olympic athletes already, competing at World Championship as well, and even Jess medaled obviously at the Com Games last year. What were the two or three key things do you think you did personally to get in a position where you become a coach of such high quality athletes and having so much success at a young age and not being a coach for too many years?
I think one thing I definitely did was very much open myself up for criticism and requested feedback. So, from the moment I wrote Jess Trengove's first marathon program, the first thing I did was go, before Jess had even seen it, I said, okay, I need someone to have a look at this, give me a bit of an indicator and some feedback if I'm doing the right thing or wrong thing. I had my old coach, Sean Crichton, as well as Chris Wardlaw, who coached greats like Steve Monteghetti, and Karen McCann. Have a look over it, give me some feedback and give me something to work with, so that I wasn't taking the athlete's career for granted. It was very much a case of I'm there to learn, but it shouldn't be at the detriment of the athletes I work with. So I've never been one to hold back from looking for feedback from people, and I openly go and look for it. The other thing is I've never been afraid to ask questions. So in that sense, I'm not going to credit myself as the guy with the highest IQ and the most brilliant academic at university. So I sort of recognise that whilst I don't need to know all the answers, I need to know where to go and look for them. So those problem-solving skills were probably quite prominent in my early years of coaching in gaining that experience. And I'd suggest it allowed me to find some really switched-on mentors who had the drive to push me, to challenge me, to get the best out of myself. And that came in all sorts of different levels, people within the distance running community, people from Athletics Australia, someone like Eric Hollingsworth, the former head coach, really challenged me as an individual, as a coach. And whilst it seems quite brutal to begin with, really was my challenge to stand up and learn from that. So I think it got the best out of me, and really looking forward, I continually look to find myself in those same sort of situations. I never want to be someone who rests on, okay, well, we've done this, so I know what I'm doing. It's fine to have other people involved and providing you with feedback, and as long as you're a lifelong learner, I think you're always going to give your athletes the honest best that you've got. So that's really what I, as a coach, try and achieve. Aside from that, on a personal note, it's been very much learning how to monitor and manage my life. Whilst I'm a coach, I'm also a full-time, 4 days a week teacher, and I work 1 day a week at Athletics South Australia. So I'm doing this on the back of a full-time job, pretty much, and a family on top of that. So as the challenges of my life have come along, I've had to learn to sort of wave certain parts of my life goodbye and really prioritise what I need to do. Otherwise, I just wouldn't be able to add the quality to what I'm doing. And that's always been something that I've valued. It's not just what I'm doing, how I'm doing it. It's how well I'm doing it. So I'm the kind of person that will get rather frustrated myself if I know I can give a better job than what I'm doing. So I therefore have to make necessary changes in my life to accommodate that. And that comes across the board. That comes with my family. That comes with my work at school. That comes my job at Athletics SA. And it also comes, obviously, with the coaching. I want those who I'm working with to get the best qualities from me and not just what's left over.
For sure. I really love that. And there's a couple of really key things. I want to talk a bit about mentors. And then I'd actually first like to touch on, in regards to sort of time allocation between, like you said, you've got your family, you've got your full-time job, you've got coaching international athletes, what are the things that you do to manage your time and to make decisions between doing something and not doing something?
I've had to get good at, I guess what you'd say, compartmentalizing my time. So when I'm at work, that's what I'm doing. I'm working on that. When I'm at coaching, I need to be focused on that. It's not taking phone calls, it's not being distracted by other means. And the same when I'm at home. One of the things I did learn from was when I was at home, I was always pulling a laptop out, writing training programs, replying to emails and all the rest of it. And I got to the point where I saw that balance wasn't occurring at home, and my family was actually suffering because I was overcommitting and not using my time well enough. So I've really done well to not take that life into the home, and to really work when I'm at work, play when I'm at play, enjoy the time coaching when I'm coaching, and certainly now that I've got a little fellow who's almost two, making sure I'm spending adequate time doing that and giving that time to my family at home. So otherwise it becomes a situation where the balance just starts to have a steamroll effect, and from one part of your life to the next, you just feel out of kilter. So I really found that was crucial for me to take that on board. And I think this is probably the first year I felt like I've gotten top of that pretty well. I'll openly say it doesn't necessarily mean I've got a lot of free time, as you would know, trying to work out a time for us to sit down and have a chat here. But what it does mean is that the time that I'm using it to its fullest extent.
Yeah, for sure, because I'm sure every person who's competing and working at a high level knows exactly what this is about, so time management is key. I want to go back to your discussion regarding your mentors you had. I sort of want to, for people listening, so how did you go about getting mentors, and what would you recommend people, obviously recommend people to have them. What are the keys to making that relationship really effective?
I think you need to find someone who you gel with fairly well. So I was pretty fortunate. One of my earliest mentors, and still continues to be one of my primary mentors, is my very first athletics coach. And we didn't part ways on any sort of negative grounds. It was very much a case of he had decisions just like I have now. He had a young family and decided to stop his coaching. But even I was only 16 at the time, and we still kept in touch since then, right up until now. And one of the key things that he really offers me is not necessarily someone who tells me how to do anything, but challenges me and asks me questions to allow me to work it out for myself. And so that questioning has been highly valuable to me, because without that, I could become highly reliant upon that person in my life. So for him to have that really valuable questioning has been great. And he's not my only mentor, and the reason for that is I find there's different people that really satisfied other areas of my life. You know, I have a coach in Victoria, Richard Huggins, who I always have as a guy on the phone and always happy to have a chat. And even if it's not coaching related, he understands the pressures of working in the same environment. He understands the pressures of managing it within your life and your family and all the rest of it. And so I find with a guy with his perspective, with the experience he has, really offers me, you know, that bit of extra experience to sort of fall back on. And then I've also got people who, whilst I know them through running, don't necessarily support me as, you know, in the running context. I have a guy who comes out and trains with our group with his daughter and has worked with quite a few of our athletes in supporting them, a guy called Shane McGregor. And Shane sort of offers me a level of professionalism about the way I go about things, about how I structure what we do with Team Tempo, and he's been great as someone to offer me some feedback in how I manage the day-to-day runnings and how I can be more effective and efficient, and how we bring things like we've managed a values agreement with our group in recent years, and he's certainly been the one to support me in structuring that environment as well. So, yeah, there's been a lot of players within the background for me who, again, don't necessarily tell me what to do, just offer me the opportunity and question me to allow me to work that out. And I think that is a crucial part of the mentor that I'm looking for, someone that challenges me, not someone who necessarily tells me what to do.
Yeah, for sure. If you had to name three coaches that you admire, and it can be in other sports as well, obviously, who would they be and why would they be?
Yeah, sure. Tough question, because I've... There's so many different facets to coaching that I really feel are important. One person who I've met in the last year, basically, but through my discussions, I found a real reason why she's as successful as she is a woman called Michelle Dendecker. And even in my limited involvement with her through a program we had through the RIS, her way of processing the value of the wellness model within supporting athletes, I thought was just outstanding. And it's been something that's really motivated me to bring something similar in with what I do with my athletes.
Is she an athlete coach, sorry? What sport is she in? Netball.
She's been head coach for the Diamonds for a number of years, and I've just won the World Championship. So, you know, she's performed at a very high level as a netballer herself. And she's based in Adelaide, so that's great for me to be able to have someone as qualified as that nearby. In regards to athletics coaches, I probably wouldn't want to say one, because quite simply, there's been so many that have influenced me and I have respect for.
Yep.
I mean, guys like Chris Wardlaw, it's hard not to have respect for someone who has had that longevity. But also, you know, I look back even the generation prior to that with a guy called Pat Clohessy, who probably has influenced my model of training more than he would recognise, and more than probably most people recognise.
Yep.
So guys like that have been crucial to my athletics development. I've got to say there's a couple of guys, and probably only through what I've noticed in what I've seen in the media through different documentaries and stuff I've watched, you know, people within in AFL have just got some great opportunities to develop as coaches, obviously, because they have that as a full-time role. But there's some certain performance pressures that they deal with, which is probably I watched a documentary called The Chosen Few that AFL put out would have been last year, just prior to the grand final, and again, I probably wouldn't want to name one coach there, but I really liked someone like Lee Matthews' approach, and I thought that from most of those AFL coaches there was significant parts of the pressures that they discussed in that documentary that really tuned in well with me and made me feel like, okay, it's actually fairly common across the board at high performance level to deal with some of these pressures. They have more professionalism sort of approach where they're paid coaches and that's their full-time job and all the rest of it. But certainly, regardless of that, as a coach, you really put the pressure on yourself to help the team do well. At the end of the day, they have to go out and the athletes have to do their own thing when they get on the start line or when the you know, siren goes. But at the end of the day, that is a part reflection of the work that you've done with them. So you're out of control. There's no control you have at that point, but you really have to sort of manage yourself well then. And I really learnt a lot from listening to them talk and having having that all sorted out as part of a model that I sort of went on. Many attributes across coaching, and it'd be hard for me just to name three, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I really want to actually go back to a competition like the World Championships that you've just come back from. What are the sort of thing? What would you say the few key things to a great performance for an athlete to, you know, really peak at a major championship with a lot of pressure on them to perform at that exact moment? What are the sort of the key things you think amount to performing really at a high level on cue?
Look, I think that's where the elite performers separate themselves from everyone else. It's how they manage the whole package. It's not just about having those physical attributes all taken care of, because we see many athletes rock up to a World Championships in top physical condition, but it's about handling the psychological pressures, the emotional, environment that you're in. It means a lot to these athletes to be there. So how do they manage that and not allow that to overtake them when they get on that start line? A lot of things that I really observe and like to see in athletes is a positive approach to how they manage themselves in those days leading into competition. So from that point of view, you know, are they doing things that they wouldn't normally do? Are they watching people, and is that causing greater anxiety for them? So that psychological game that they lead into is really important. Are they collectively thinking about the process and going through that process, not trying to adjust it, chop and change as they're going towards their major competition, but actually trusting in the process? Because I honestly believe that a lot of what you set up in the months leading into that is what comes to fruition there. So if they're confident with the plan, if they're confident with what you've done, and they're happy with the approach, then those sort of things take care of themselves fairly well. Also, you know, athletes have to learn to be athletes. Whilst coaches are there to guide them, athletes still need to make the choices. So we're not joint at the hip. We're not there to watch what they do, see what they eat, see how they interact with people and mediate that. We're really there just to support them if they need it. So the key things that I really would look for is someone who manages their time well, who follows the process, and who understands what is required of them when they get on that start line. So they have that tactical sort of understanding. All of the technical and the physical really should be taken care of prior to then. And if it's not, it's kind of a bit too late at that point. So should they have the physical training happening? Should be already done, okay? And we're just looking to polish off and allow them the opportunity to go there with the least restrictions possible to perform. And that comes into them managing that, as well as the coach working with them to plan that through months and years leading into that.
For sure, for sure. If you had to point out a few things to avoid, or a few things maybe coaches might make in terms of mistakes in regards to getting the best out of others and really competing at a high level, what were sort of things you would say to keep clear of?
One of the things that I really, I bang on about this because I think it's quite important, but I know that there's disagreement within the coaching fraternity about this, so I'll throw it out there and see how the listeners go with it. One of the things I really feel is important for me as a coach, and it might be more personal to me, is actually removing the competitive side of coaching, which sounds a bit strange, but from my point of view, I am assisting the athletes to be competitive, and I am certainly not trying to compete with other coaches. I wish all the coaches all the best. I know they all work hard, so from my point of view, I don't care to compete with other coaches. I'm not trying to be a better coach than anyone else. All I'm trying to do is be the best coach I can be for the athletes I work with. Yeah. And that means supporting them to be as competitive as what they are trying to achieve to be. So I believe that when you remove that emotion, you're more likely to take the more logical, sensible approach to the discussion with your athletes. The athlete is going to be a fairly emotional being, and they should be, because it means a lot to them. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't be there. They wouldn't be doing it. So they're going to often come to you with things that they want to do, would like to do. But as a coach, you need to be there offering the sort of observational point of view of what they need to do. And so if I was getting into an emotional sort of discussion with an athlete regarding what we're going to do and all the rest of it, then maybe I might feed towards those emotions of what I'm wanting them to do. And I think that's where coaches can come unstuck by you know, putting athletes in positions and making decisions based on what you would like them to do. Whereas from my point of view, I'd like to remove myself from that and just really look at the process and try and tune out from that other stuff and really be there just to support them to live the life and excel and go to and achieve their dreams, basically.
And we're sort of coming towards the end of the interview, and like I could talk with you about athletics for hours. It's just obviously you know what you're doing is one of my passions as well. If you could leave basically for, you know, say you had three pieces of advice to leave for other runners and for athletes and people in business in general, that you could leave them with, and you know that these three pieces of advice would help them achieve great success in the coming years, what three things would you say to adopt and make a part of yourself?
I think the first one we've touched on today is be open to learning. Never shy away from the opportunity to have a chat with someone, because that's something where you're going to learn. No matter who it is, no matter what the level is, you will be able to take something from every conversation you have within your environment. I'd say, you know, set a direction. Although I might have sounded a bit fluffy with that just in my last response, I think that it's quite key in setting a direction for your life, and not just in your chosen career or sport. It's essential that you do that with your whole life. And whilst I might be a bit sheepish on it in an interview, you know, I've constantly over the years set, you know, 5-year plans for myself and continuously written goals for myself. And I'll continue to do that on a more personal level. But one of the things I do with my athletes, I really encourage them to write their goals, not only athletically, but for their career and for their personal life. Because I think if we lose that balance, it's going to affect us in the other areas of our life. And outside of that, it's take a risk. It's take a risk. Never be afraid to fail, because you'll fail more often than you succeed. And there's more quotes of that than you can find on Google. But at the end of the day, that risk-taking is where you're going to find your success, because if you sit in your comfort zone for too long, you're not going to grow there. So really, it's finding that opportunity to take that risk, and then when you see it, take advantage of it. Mm. And throw yourself into it 100%. If you take that risk half-heartedly, you're definitely not going to make much of it. So you're more likely to get somewhere if you actually throw yourself 100%, take that risk and commit yourself fully.
Love it, love it. If you could recommend three books that listeners should get their hands on, three books that would be helpful in taking their performance to the next level, whether it be in business, whether it be in sport, whether in their, you know, university or even high school still, what would be the three books you would recommend get your hands on?
Yeah, one I've read recently is one called Outliers. Outliers is, you know, it's a fairly common sort of concept, but I just like the way it challenged the way that we approach some of our development and how things come to be, you know. So I really learnt a lot from that and found that quite valuable. As for specific titles of books, look, I have read books by to do with group dynamics often. So I've got a gaggle of them. And what I've probably learned from them is not specifically about you need everything to be a team, but what I did find from that is it's a good way of understanding how people work. So probably can't give you a specific title on that one because there's probably been about 10 that I've read, but I found learning about that part of leadership is really important. So you know, you'll pick up something from most of them. And then there's a bunch of books around being mindful and you know, specific mindsets. And again, numerous titles that I've sort of read on that one. So whilst I know you want a nice tidy list, I probably can't give you one.
Yep.
And that comes down to what I talked about, how I sort of manage my life, about focusing, about being in the moment. That's something we really focus on with athletes. So that mindset and mindfulness is really important. And when I talked about how I manage my life, about when I'm at work, I work. When I'm at home, I'm home. And when I'm at coaching, I'm coaching. And when I'm spending my own time, I'm doing my own thing. And that's something that I learned a lot from reading books on being mindful about things and having specific mindsets towards what we're doing. And understanding different mindsets is going to allow you to tune in with them as a leader. So I think that's probably the most valuable thing. So yeah, outlines to understand how things may progress. Books on group dynamics to understand how to form those relationships with different peoples in different contexts, and mindsets to help you understand how you work best and how to tune in with how others work best as well.
No, love it. I reckon listeners will get a hold of some books in those areas and really apply themselves. And I really appreciate you coming on the show, and I really want to acknowledge you for the amazing work you're doing with your athletes at the highest of levels and at the state and lower levels as well. I think you're doing some fantastic. I really look forward to watching you in the coming years do some amazing things. And hopefully we'll have to catch up again sometime on the show and talk some more.
No worries, Dave. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you. So there you have it, folks. Adam Didick, isn't he an absolute star? Man, so happy to have him on the show finally. I've been trying to organise that for a while. So, man, got him on the show. Hope you learn a lot. I know I took away a lot from that, and definitely some things I'm going to apply myself. And I really hope that you guys do too and really grab a hold of those few things, apply them to yourself, put them in action. That's what we're all here and trying to do, is really take ourselves and our game to the next level. So guys, yeah, give us a shout out. Let me know what you think. You know, get me on Instagram, on Elite Team Leadership. Same goes for Twitter and Facebook, Elite Team Leadership. Jump on board and give us a shout out. Say hi, and I'll say hi back. It'd be good to discuss, see what your thoughts on Adam and what you learned and what you took away and what you're doing with it now, and just the gains you're going to get from these sorts of things. So love to hear from you. And as always, guys, yeah, make sure you pass it on. Let some friends know about this stuff. You know, it's free and it's for you guys as a resource to really, you know, get yourselves up to a new level and achieving more joy, more happiness, and just more proud of the results that you're gaining in your area that you're going after. So guys, hope you enjoyed Adam Didick episode 24, and I really look forward to chatting in next week with another super guest. So keep an eye out for that one. Talk to you soon.